Happy Labor Day, everybody. This is Peter Shapiro. And with me in the studio today is a gentleman named Leo Robinson. Not to embarrass him, but he is a living, breathing piece of labor history. He retired 10 years ago, was it, after a 35-year career on the waterfront in the Port of Oakland, California. He was an officer in ILWU Local 10. He fought for the rights of black workers. He played an instrumental role in what I consider one of organized labor's finest hours, when a ship bound for apartheid South Africa remained anchored for days off San Francisco's South Waterfront because union longshoremen refused to handle its cargo. Brother Robinson, welcome to KBOO. You and your family came up from the South during World War II, is that correct?
Yes.
And you settled in the projects in West Oakland?
Yes.
And you went to Oakland Tech High School and then went to the Navy?
Yes. Yes.
So when did you muster out?
May the 7th, 1958.
My Lord, he remembers the date.
Yes.
And did you go to work directly on the waterfront when you got out?
No. No, I worked for 3 years and 11 months to the day in the auto industry.
What that was what?
I worked for General Motors.
Mm-hmm. And how did that work for you?
It didn't. I hated it, every minute of it. It was, I mean, if you've ever been on an assembly line, you'll know that it's repetitious, mind-numbing, drudgery is what it is, yeah.
Did you, were you happy with the kind of union representation you got when you were there?
Not at all, not at all.
What kinds of problems?
Well, the so-called union representatives had a better relationship with the company than they did with the workers on the line. So, and I was never one to, take abuse from anybody. And it just didn't work out.
How did you wind up on the waterfront then?
Well, my father was a longshoreman. Unlike other industries where you're hired as an individual on maybe on a day-to-day, month-to-month, week-to-week basis, you know, people stumble in off the streets and put in an application and get hired. We don't do it that way on the waterfront. We hire in large groups.
But you sign up at the union hall. You don't sign up with any employer or anything like that.
Initially, you put in an application that's the hiring is a joint affair where the union and the employer sit down and go over the applications and.
People always say that one of the things that made the ILWU what it was is the fact that it did have so much control over the hiring process. Would you agree?
Oh, the hiring hall is the lifeblood of the waterfront. Without the hiring hall, we wouldn't be anything, because that's where we meet, where we talk, we exchange information. The hiring hall is the equalizer.
And did you, once you started working on the waterfront, did you start off doing as a casual, or were you doing regular work?
No, I started off as a B-man.
A B-man, which means?
That's limited registration.
Right.
You're not a fully registered A-man, but you have, you earn vacation, you earn all of your benefits and stuff like that, whereas a casual gets none of that.
And you were working more or less full-time?
Not at first, no. I mean, the waterfront is not, it's a casual industry, period.
Yeah.
And you work when the ship is there, and you don't work when it's not there. The waterfront is, it's not a job. The waterfront is a way of life. It changes your whole outlook on the socioeconomic and political goings on everywhere. It's a thing that you pick it up.
How did it change yours? I mean, how would you say your outlook changed as a result of your work on the dock those first 2 years?
Well, hear things as you're growing up. The politics of the day, and you receive an education in the public schools that's geared to perpetuate the system as we know it. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
So when you come on the waterfront, you find out what the left is, at least in the city of San Francisco on the waterfront. You found out what the left is, what it meant. And so it changes your whole outlook. I remember during the Vietnam War, I had not yet started to formulate a real ideological outlook. But it happened to me one day at Pier 33 on the San Francisco side. We were working in the hatch, and we were almost up on deck. And we were talking about the Vietnam War. Of course, being an ex-Navy man and all that sort of junk, I had the perspective of the true blue patriotic American, right? And one of the fellas that I was working with to this day, I don't remember who it was, he says, I want to ask you a question. He says, you don't have to give me an answer right now. He says, but I just want you to answer the question. He says, of what kind of a threat do the Vietnamese pose to you?
What did you say?
Well, I started to say several things, but none of them made any sense.
So you caught yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I mean, you know, I know when I'm being backed into a corner. And so he said, I want you to do a couple of favors for me. He says, got a dictionary at home? I said, yeah, I got a dictionary. He says, look up imperialism and look up communism, look up capitalism. Then you'll know some things. You'll begin to think some things. And he was right.
Did you talk to the guy again after that?
I can't remember to this day who he was.
But he got you thinking.
If he walked in here and slapped me, I wouldn't know who he was.
But whoever he was, it sounds like he was a pretty good organizer.
Yeah, I mean, he had, he got me interested. And so slowly but surely, you start to question things that were taught even from childhood.
We're talking with Leo Robinson, a longtime activist in the International Longshoremen and Warehousemen's Union and the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. And he's telling us now how he came to be involved in union politics.
A brother by the name of Archie Brown. He was a member of the Communist Party.
Yeah.
And everybody knew him. They knew who he was, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And so he heard our plea. Even my father didn't hear our pleas because we were going against his contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, loyalty is a hell of a thing.
Was your father still working on the docks at that point?
Oh, yes. My father didn't retire until 1970.
Right.
71. At any rate, he taught us how to organize. He didn't do anything for us. He just taught us how to organize. He says, you attack the issue, not the person.
Right.
You remove the person from the issue, and then the loyalty diminishes.
Right.
People are able to see through the loyalty to the issue itself, and then they have to deal with it.
Right.
He taught us how to write leaflets, just how to organize ourselves within the local,
mm-hmm.
to the point that before it was over, we were able to challenge Harry Bridges himself.
What did you challenge him over?
Over the contract.
Uh-huh.
He had never had a contract turned down in his home local, that is Local 10. Never. Never. And we challenged him, and we started writing little leaflets and at first, the old-timers, I mean, because they were still the predominant group, the old-timers,
mm-hmm.
That is my father's generation. When we first started coming out in opposition to him, and we would be handing out the leaflets, some of them would take them, some of them would throw them on the ground and call you a bunch of dirty names and be ready to punch you in the mouth. But slowly but surely, we were able to again identify the issues right. and address the issues rather than attack Harry himself. I mean, Harry was a living legend and a man that I greatly admire because I'm the beneficiary of his policies. So I can't be critical of all of his policies, but I can be critical of those ones that were detrimental to me.
What specifically were the issues that you were...
The steady man was the main issue.
What was that exactly?
The steady man was he was a guy who didn't have to come to the hall. His job was, he worked directly for a specific stevedore and company or shipping company. He didn't have to come to the hall ever. And over time, that kind of a situation develops where the guy is more attuned to the needs of the employer than he is to the needs of the union.
Well, now, my understanding of the way the hiring hall process works is everybody goes down to the hall and waits his turn. Everybody's pretty much treated on equal terms, and that was central to the way the union was set up.
Yes.
So the steady man system, this is something that sort of appeared out of the blue?
Yes. The steady man system was a consequence of the modernization and mechanization contract that was signed in 1961.
Let's talk about that. Before we do, I want to back up a little bit. You were talking about what it was like handling cargo when you first came in, mm-hmm. when they still had, I guess, what they used to call break bulk cargo?
Yes.
Can you explain how that worked and how it was different from the way it's done now, how technology kind of changed the whole process?
Break bulk cargo is cargo that's loose. Like if, say, you got sacks of... rice or sacks of coffee, you handle each individual sack. Put it in a pile or put it on a board, whatever the case may be. And you could measure your tonnage in terms of how many boards could you do in an hour.
Right.
When we went to containerization, all of those sacks were already on a board in a container, and all you had to lift was the container. You could lift 40 tons and move it wherever you wanted to move it in less than a minute, whereas it took maybe 2 hours or an hour and a half to move 40 tons in break bulk fashion.
Well, now, you work break bulk cargo by hand. Container, I obviously didn't move those by hand.
No, you move those by machinery. I put it this way. The emphasis prior to containerization was on the individual man.
Yeah.
When you got to the containerization, the emphasis was on the machine, and the man was incidental to that.
One of the things about the old way of handling cargo is you'd have a crew of about, what, maybe a dozen people working out.
In the hold of the ship,
yeah.
On a loadout, you would have 8 men. On a discharge, you would have 6 men.
Right.
Okay, that's just the men in the hold. Then you would have the 2-winch drivers, the gang boss. This is in the port of San Francisco.
Did they work together very closely?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was in a gang. You work together on a daily basis. You get to know one another as individuals, as you play cards together. Some of you socialize together so that there's a bond between you. You don't have that on a container operation. The crane driver is 100 and something feet up in the air. The only way you can talk to him is by radio. The tractor drivers come under the hook once every 7 or 8 minutes. They've got a minute under the hook, then they're gone again, so you can't have a conversation with him. There is no gang boss as such, not in the port of San Francisco, on that kind of an operation. You deal directly with supervision. And no more than, say, you and your partner, whoever that happens to be. I worked break bulk. I knew what it was to work it. And I understood it. And I also understood the introduction of the machine. I saw what that meant. Now, let me go back just a second. There's also the question of supervision.
Yeah.
When they implemented the M&M agreement,
mechanization.
They also started to change the complexion of supervision. In the old days, the superintendent was either an ex-longshoreman or a walking boss or a clerk or an ex-seaman. And by 1963, the newer superintendents were coming out of colleges, had never seen a ship.
Right.
All they knew is they've left a set of instructions here that says you have to do such and such and such a thing. Right. And they didn't give a damn. They had no relationship to you. They didn't identify with you as a longshoreman.
Okay.
Because that was one of the changes that was implemented.
Well, you mentioned the steady man system. I mean, how is that a result of the container coming in?
Well, they were the ones that started to operate in the machinery.
Uh-huh.
The cranes, the whatever piece of equipment they used out in the yard to stack the containers or whatever, they drove them. Those jobs no longer came to the hall.
And that was pretty highly paid work, wasn't it?
Well, it pays well.
Uh-huh. I mean, more than you'd get working down the hold, for instance.
Oh, I mean, a crane driver, of course, he makes more money than a basic longshoreman.
Yeah, I mean, you're working.
But the idea was that prior to the M&M agreement, a hold man had a shot at getting a crane job.
Right, I get it.
You know. But if that job no longer comes to the hall, then that whole man is stuck.
So
he doesn't get a shot.
What was the upshot of the struggle over the steady man?
Oh, it went on for almost 20 years. And in some instances, it still goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Because it creates two classes of longshoremen.
Well, you've got a lot less people working on the waterfront.
Well, absolutely, yes. When I came on the waterfront in the Port of San Francisco, we had roughly 4,500 men. That was in 1963. By 1975, that figure was down to something like 2,500. So our membership had been cut in half in 10 years.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that those 2,500 men were thrown out in the streets. What it meant was that the employer started using financial incentives to reduce the workforce by
retirement,
that sort of stuff. Like my father, for instance, he qualified under the M&M agreement to get this bonus that they gave, which added up to about $17,500. Okay, and so a lot of the longshoremen saw that quote-unquote dollar sign and took off.
Yeah.
You know.
You kept at it. Nobody offered you early retirement?
No, I'm afraid not. They didn't offer me anything.
You were too valuable, I guess.
That depends upon whose point of view you take. I was known as, after I started running for office,
I wanted to ask
known
you
as
about
a
that.
Radical, whatever the hell that is.
Well, you did run for office, and you did win. You were an officer in Local 10 starting, in the 80s?
No, I started in the 70s, right after the strike in 71.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I started running for office. I made the executive board. You know, I did what everybody else did. I stood out there and glad-handed people as they came in the hall, handed them my card and all that sort of stuff. So I stopped that nonsense.
Uh-huh.
After that, I never put out another card. It was strictly by word of mouth, you know, that, hey, this is what Leo is running for. If you see him on the ballot, you know, give him a shot. If not, well, what the hell?
And we're talking with Leo Robinson, longtime international longshore and warehouse union activist and a member of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. We're going to come back to this interview in a little bit. Just let you know right now that this is KBOO Portland. I'm Peter Shapiro, and this is the special Labor Day programming co-produced by the KBOO Labor Radio Collective and the Old Mole Variety Hour. Stay tuned. We're going to have more music, more interviews, and more insights.